Today's episode of the Can Be Now podcast is brought to you by Gustafson Insurance, business, home, and auto insurance made simple. For a free quote, call 503-266-2216.
This tax exemption eludes me like a gazelle eludes an arthritic cat.
Why can't Canby people keep track of their dogs? Like, what is...
To do that, you can't be stupid with guns.
Yeah. Set the board is saying they want to make Canby schools great again.
It feels like we've been doing this interview for years.
Inside of me was screaming.
You run for school board, you win or you die.
There's no second place.
Welcome to the Can Be Now podcast.
We are the best and easiest way to stay connected to what's happening in your hometown. I'm Tyler Franke.
And I'm Tyler Clausen.
Though the Canby School District released a statement Tuesday saying they would no longer use fireworks at high school football games, the matter appears far from settled following the outcry of many residents lamenting the loss of the long-standing tradition. Tuesday's statement was in response to a letter from Canby City Administrator Rick Robinson, who shared the concerns of local resident Paul Yelvisacker. Yelvisacker lives near the high school and suffers from chronic neck pain and PTSD, which are exacerbated by the random blasts, a condition that was verified in a letter from his doctor. Yelvisacker had also collected about 50 signatures from his neighbors, as well as two veterinary clinics and a senior care facility, in a petition asking the high school to find a quieter and less intrusive way to celebrate their football team. The district has an exemption in the city's noise ordinance, specifically allowing them to use fireworks at school-sanctioned events, so Robinson's email to Superintendent Tripp Goodall was only a request, not an order. Evidently, Tripp didn't see it that way. I believe Mr. Goodall read my request as a directive and acted in a manner consistent with his understanding, Robinson told the Can Be Now podcast on Wednesday. Indeed, Tuesday's statement from the superintendent had used the word directive. So where exactly do things stand now with the home season opener only 8 days away? There are a lot of angry, upset, and confused Canby residents, for one thing. The district's announcement just about broke the Canby Now Facebook group Tuesday afternoon, as hundreds reacted to the news, the clear majority seemingly on the side of keep the fireworks. A counter-movement quickly formed with the goal of doing just that, and an online petition was soon being circulated. Many expressed dismay that the decision had come about so quickly based on a single petition and a relatively small group, and seemingly without the input or direction of elected officials or the general public. A lot of kids work really hard to make these games happen, from the football team to the band and the cheerleaders and many others, said Brian Haynes, owner of the Canby Music Store, a Canby School District parent, and a CHS grad, class of 97. I've not seen enough opposition to warrant a ban. You get 50 people to sign just about anything. The vast majority are against this. This is about principle, Catherine Christensen, another resident and local business owner, agreed. If this is all it takes to get the fireworks at the high school nixed, what little will have to be done to take away the 4th of July fireworks at Trost or the Canby Rodeo? There are a lot of people who live over by the fairgrounds too. At least one school board member does not believe the matter is settled, and he said he expects it to be on the agenda for discussion at the next scheduled meeting September 18th, or perhaps the next work session on September 5th. This is not a done deal, said Vice Chair Mike Zagava. You can trust me on that. For his part, Robinson said he hopes the discussions continue and a positive outcome is ultimately reached. I would hope that some compromise will be possible that is both sensitive to the needs of those adversely affected by the fireworks and also provides the attendees at football games the opportunity to enjoy fireworks, he said.
The sale of Aurora-based Columbia Helicopters has officially been completed to AE Industrial Partners, a private equity firm headquartered in Boca Raton, Florida, which specializes in aerospace, defense services, power generation, and specialty industrial markets. Terms of the deal, which was first announced on July 18th, were not disclosed. It was actually the second time in the past year that a larger investor had attempted to add the privately owned company based at Aurora State Airport to its holdings. A Houston, Texas-based Canby-based investment group announced its intentions to purchase Columbia for $560 million last November, but the deal unraveled several months later. The Bristow Group filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy protection in May. This deal went much more smoothly and more quietly. Kirkland & Ellis LLP served as legal advisor, Rothschild & Co. served as financing advisor, and Prince Waterhouse Coopers LLP served as financial advisor to AEI. Tonkin Torp LLP served as legal advisor, and Greenhill & Co. LLC served as financial advisor to Columbia. According to AEI's earlier release, Columbia CEO Steve Bandy was to remain in his role, while majority owner Nancy LaMotta would retain a significant ownership position in the company. Columbia was founded by the late Wes LaMotta in 1957 and is now a global leader in heavy lift helicopter operations and manufacture, maintenance, repair, and overhaul services. Its home airfield is the Aurora Airport. Its name is named after LaMotta. Columbia owns, operates, and maintains a fleet of Columbia Model 107 to Vertol, Columbia Model 234 Chinook, and Columbia Model CH-47D Chinook helicopters. These aircraft are operated around the world, providing passengers and cargo services to customers across various end markets.
Every time Ken Buckles meets a Vietnam veteran, he asks if he can shake their hand and talk to them for a few minutes. At the end, he says, "I'm so sorry for how you were treated when you came back home." They thank him, often with tears in their eyes. The Vietnam War claimed the lives of more than 58,000 American service members and wounded over 150,000. Sadly, for the men who served in Vietnam and survived unspeakable horrors, coming home offered its own kind of trauma. They were screamed at, insulted, abused, even spit on. For a generation that was angry and disillusioned about their country's role in a deeply unpopular war and who did not have ready access to their political leaders, returning service members received the brunt of their ire. Buckles is the founder and director of Remembering America's Heroes, a nonprofit that seeks to preserve veterans' stories and share them with younger generations, particularly high school students. He says that in his 23 years of doing this work, connecting with Vietnam vets has always been his greatest challenge. The idea of an apology to Vietnam veterans stems from a conversation he had with a Vietnam vet from New Zealand. He told us the story during a recent visit to Now Hear This Studios in Canby.
Well, we had gone out to dinner, met our grandkids and daughter at a restaurant in Clackamas area, and at a table was a gentleman with a Vietnam vet hat on, and he took it off and set it on the table when he ate, and I always go up to them and start chatting. I don't say welcome home or thank you, sure. I like to break the ice by I like to say that. And I says, "Well, I'm really sorry for how you were treated." And it really means a lot to him. Well, when I went over to chat to him, he had an accent. And I said, "Where are you from?" And he said, "I'm from New Zealand." He said, "We had troops in Vietnam and so did the Aussies. We had your Yanks back."
Yeah.
And I laughed and I said, I'm a history nut. I said, "I had no idea." I said, I never knew that.
He goes, "Yeah." I didn't realize that either.
Yeah, so we had a great conversation. South Korea had troops there too. We were having this great conversations, but at the end I said, "Well, you probably weren't treated how our guys were."
Right. I would assume the same.
Yeah, I would assume. He said, "The heck we," what he used a cuss word, "the heck we weren't." He says, "I was spit on when we landed in New Zealand and Aussies were treated bad and it was horrible." And he got tears in his eyes and he says, "But I got to tell you what our country did in 2008. They had a National Vietnam Veteran Apology Day." And he said it was the most powerful, emotional, healing day. He said we were all bawling like babies.
Yeah.
He said it meant so much for our country to say, "We're sorry." And and I said, "Gosh, what if we started that here in the United States?" And he just laughed.
Yeah.
He said, "You Yanks are too self-centered. You'll never do it." Mm-hmm. And then I woke up in the middle of the night in July and it came to me. I said, "We're going to start it. I know Canby will jump all over it. We're going to start it in Canby. If it spreads, so be it. If it doesn't spread, so be it. But we're going to do it in Canby." And like I said, the momentum is, it's amazing. It's happening.
Yeah.
He's asking folks who are interested in joining the movement to wear a special shirt on Veterans Day, November 11th. It boasts a simple message: Dear Vietnam Veterans, I'm so sorry for the way you're treated when you came home, along with the depiction of the Vietnam Service Ribbon. You can get yours from the Remembering American Heroes website at rahusa.us for a $20 donation, shipping included. The shirts are also available to Canby businesses for $10 apiece, so they can buy them in bulk for their employees to wear on Veterans Day. For our more in-depth interview with Ken and Melinda Buckles, tune into the September 16th episode of the Canby Now podcast.
Registration is now open for Drive with a Cop 2019. The annual event brings together teen drivers and Clackamas County Sheriff's Office deputies for a day of driver training at the Portland International Raceway. This year's Drive with a Cop is set for Saturday, October 5th, from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. This year's event will be bigger than ever before and will include new technology to help teens stay safe on the road. Teen drivers will get driving training from deputies on the racetrack and rotate through various stations outside the car to learn about the dangers of driving too fast, distracted, or impaired. Teen car crashes are the leading killer of young people nationwide, said Sheriff Craig Roberts. Drive with a Cop is a way for us to offer free driving training to kids in our community. Research shows the more training a teen has, the less likely they are to die in a car accident. At this year's Drive with a Cop, Les Schwab will host a station to teach teen drivers how to change a tire, put on change, and what to do if your car breaks down. I actually think I might need to go to this. I wonder what the age cutoff is. Register today at www.driveofthecop.com. Spaces are limited to the first 100 people to register, and the event tends to fill up pretty quick. Speaking of cops, let's do Police Beat for the week of July 30th through August 5th. Man, there's so much going on. July 30th at 12:28 p.m., an uninsured vehicle being driven by an unlicensed driver was impounded. 5:15 p.m., while responding to a verbal domestic disturbance, officers arrested one of those involved. At 8:51 p.m., a woman was arrested for theft from a store. That's fun. July 31st at 12:40 a.m., getting the day started right, a driver of an uninsured vehicle was arrested for DUI. And he had methamphetamine and an open container of alcohol. That's fun. 12:46 a.m., two minors were taken into protective custody for a curfew violation, and they were found walking down the middle of the road. Seems like, something I would have done as a kid. At 10:54 p.m., an intoxicated and aggressive person who had stumbled into the street was transported to a detox facility, probably the right place for him. August 1st at 11:13 p.m., a person suffering a reaction from the use of a controlled substance was transported to a medical facility before being arrested for DUI. August 2nd at 12:08 a.m., while on foot patrol, an officer located a camper sleeping in bushes next to a sidewalk and miscellaneous trash and open containers of alcohol spread out throughout the area. The man was cited for disorderly conduct, after which he complied with the officer's directive to clean up the area where he had been camping. 9:54 a.m., officers were dispatched to a verbal domestic dispute. One person was cited for harassment. That sucks. At 11 a.m., report of two vehicle crash. One driver was cited for illegal stopping parking. I didn't know that you could have illegal stopping parking. That's crazy. At 3:30 p.m., officer report of a hit and run damage to a parked vehicle. This is not the first time I've seen this. Why are people hitting parked vehicles? Maybe they were hitting, maybe it was illegally parked. I don't know. I'm just making things up. And then a laptop was reportedly stolen off the table located in a fenced yard of a residence. That sucks! I would lose my mind if someone took my laptop from my house. August 3rd, 2:13 p.m., report of a lost wallet at a city park. 3:41 p.m., report of an unknown person grabbing and running away with a money bag belonging to a vendor at a city park. I really... envision like a person with a bag with the little money sign, and then the robber is wearing striped clothes with like the mask, literally just grabbing it and running it. But that's probably not what happened. 5:10 p.m. hit and run damage caused to a parked vehicle. Based on witness information, officers located the suspect and the vehicle and its driver later that same day. That's good. August 4th at 9:43 p.m., a traffic stop was conducted on a vehicle without operating taillights. The driver was cited for driving while suspended and driving uninsured, and the vehicle is towed. That does suck a bit. August 5th at 1:46 p.m., a transient was directed to clean up the camp he had created in a city park. So twice in the same week. That's not fun for, you know, people who don't like transients camping in their city. And finally, at 3:24 p.m., a traffic stop was conducted on an uninsured vehicle with an expired registration. The driver was arrested for DUI, controlled substances, and for driving while suspended. The driver was arrested for possession and distribution of methamphetamine. Seized from the vehicle were counterfeit currency and jewelry, along with miscellaneous credit cards, checks, and ID not belonging to the driver or the passenger.
You know, Halloween will be here before you know it. Heck, the decorations are already in the stores. So I've got a scary good deal for you. DirectLink is offering 50% off their blazing fast internet speeds now through All Hallows Eve. Not only will you get a sweet candy corn of a deal, but every one of their broadband connections comes with unlimited data, free, and that's no trick. So switch to DirectLink to stream and surf as much as you like. Plus, take advantage of free Wi-Fi home networking for 6 months with free installation of commercial-grade Wi-Fi equipment that ensures your entire home has the strongest, most consistent signal in every room. Talk about a treat. Call 503-266-8111 or visit directlink.coop for blazing fast internet.
Located just off the corner of 13th and South Ivy is one of the most magical places on earth, Puddin' River Chocolates. That's where Chief Chocolatier Teresa Sassy and her team of employees hand make some of the richest, most delicious gourmet chocolates you can find anywhere. Yeah, that's right. Willy Wonka wishes he was this good. Teresa uses the highest quality free trade cocoa from around the globe and locally sourced hazelnuts, berries, and other ingredients to create world-class confections that are a treat to the eyes and the taste buds. And they do more than chocolate. The classic fondue is an ideal blend of Swiss cheese, wine, and spices that you have got to try. Puddin' River's creations make a great gift for a loved one, or hey, for yourself, because you know what? You deserve it. I deserve it, Frankie! Find them at PuddinRiverChocolates.com.
All right, welcome back, listeners. I'd like to introduce you a few guests here on the Candy Conversation today. We have Karen and Brent Brailge. Karen is the executive director of Neurotherapeutic Pediatric Therapies. We're just going to call it Neuro. And Brent is the president of their board. And they are soon to be, or I mean, I guess you kind of are already, the newest members of the Canby community and downtown Canby, having just moved in this summer to the old Grand Central Station building on North Elm. So welcome onto the Canby Now podcast.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I really appreciate you guys being on. We also have Mackenzie Waterman. Come on over here. You're too far away. Mackenzie Waterman is shadowing us today and maybe on some other interviews as well. She's a high school student mm-hmm. at Canby High.
Yeah.
And is looking to maybe go into the media unless I can talk her out of it. So she might chip in with some questions here and there if she feels brave enough. And we hope she does. Okay. Well, let's start by asking Karen and Brent if you could tell us a little bit of the history of Neuro, how it all started, where this desire came from. Canby is the 7th location for your facility that started in Oregon City. Well, tell us the story.
Boy, this goes way back.
It goes way back.
You have 1 minute.
It starts with our history, right?
Yeah.
Brent and I were married young. We were 19 and 20, and we always wanted a large family. It didn't happen the way we had thought it would happen, and we ended up adopting four kids. Mm-hmm. Three of them have special needs. And I think being young and enthusiastic, and we had good
and naive.
Is Brent the more honest?
Maybe.
No. Yeah. That's
we've got experience perspective.
We've got an idealist and a realist.
There we go. Okay. I'm a registered nurse, and Brent is an environmental engineer. So we have good education, strong families, lots of good support. Mm-hmm. And so we thought that we could do this. Mm-hmm. And so we adopted three kids with special needs and really began to understand how difficult that journey is. Yeah. And how hard it is to do.
And if I may ask, it sounds like it was you because sometimes you don't always know if kids, like, they develop special needs. It sounds like you knew that coming in. And
yes,
were,
we did.
You felt like you...
Yep.
Had the support to handle that.
Yep.
Okay.
We didn't know the whole depth.
Yeah.
And really what all of those diagnoses meant.
Yeah.
But
so it sounds like you found in your there were kind of some gaps or some needs in the area for families with children with special needs, and that's kind of what led you on this journey?
Absolutely. Well, initially we purchased Neurotherapeutics as a small clinic because it was about to close, and I didn't want to drive to Portland for therapy.
Oh, there you go.
I wanted therapy in my backyard, and my clinic was about to close.
And that was in Oregon City?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. And so we started there. Basically, the owner handed it to us. She moved to Alaska and just said, I can't do this anymore, and, uh-huh. and basically handed us the clinic. And
yeah, hard to get farther away than
yeah, yeah. So we figured we'd try it. And, you know, for a few years, what the heck.
Yeah.
And
Karen was very reluctant initially.
Really? But
the twins had just gone into kindergarten, so she had a few hours in her day that she weren't filled, so.
What year was this?
97.
Okay.
Yep. Okay. About 22 years
ago?
Yep.
Exactly.
And, yeah, she was bemoaning the closing of the clinic mm. with the owner leaving. Yeah. Several people, including me, said, well, why don't you buy it? And she was just, I've got four little kids. I can't buy it.
Yeah. I'm a nurse. I'm not a business person and
yeah.
all of that. But
because yeah, it was a for-profit clinic.
Yes.
That
yes.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
So I went ahead and took it over. There were some good systems in place, mm-hmm. and we began to run. We were doing 135 client visits a month at
okay.
that point. We now are doing, I think last month we did 2,500 mm. in seven sites.
Wow.
So we've grown a lot. Mm-hmm. In 2007, we became a nonprofit, mm. and that was because of our core value of never closing the doors to kids on Oregon Health Plan. Mm. And unfortunately, you cannot do that and run a for-profit business.
Yeah.
We lose approximately $27 on every single Oregon Health Plan visit. From
how
the
much?
$27.
Wow.
So from what it costs us to actually provide the service,
yeah.
the gap between what the insurance pays and what it costs us to provide is $27.
You couldn't do that under the for-profit model.
Nope.
Yeah. You can do it with a small amount
yeah.
because some of the private insurances pay more.
Yeah.
So you can kind of blend that and come out okay if you're about 15% Oregon Health Plan.
Yeah.
And we're running close to 50% right now.
Oh my gosh.
And when we became a nonprofit, we were running about 20%.
Did you still just have the one clinic at that point? Or
we had two.
Two at that point.
Okay. And my yeah. understanding is to convert into the nonprofit, you guys basically had to donate the assets that were present under the for-profit
yes.
company, including the buildings and whatnot.
We donated the entire company to the nonprofit that we had set up.
Yeah.
And then I became the executive director and Brent's the board president. And we
yeah.
began to run with a full board
mm.
as
yeah.
a nonprofit.
That's really amazing. I mean, that you guys were willing to do that and out of just the desire to serve your clients.
Yes. The IRS couldn't believe it. We almost didn't get our nonprofit status because they thought we were trying to pull people over their eyes. Yep.
Oh, that's a fascinating.
Yeah. They fought and fought and fought. And finally, they...
Those suspicious
yep.
revenue
yep.
agents.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, you know, they have had the wool pulled over their eyes
yes. many times,
yeah.
I'm sure.
So let's give them a break.
Yeah.
So. Wow. Okay, so 07, two clinics, converted to the nonprofit, finally convinced the IRS to accept it.
Yep. Yep.
And then just continued to expand them.
Yeah, we actually had a woman who donated... two small clinics to us after
mm-hmm.
we became a nonprofit.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of selling them, she donated them. There was one in Hillsboro and one in McMinnville.
Mm-hmm.
So then we were up to four.
Mm-hmm.
Then we opened...
Wilsonville and Medford. I
yep.
don't know the time
yep.
frame.
Can't remember which was first. Medford, I think.
I think was first.
Then Wilsonville. Then...
That's interesting.
Gabby? Yeah.
And Cambie. That's right. Yeah. And we've had multiple expansions at those different sites.
Yeah. Okay. Well, this is the Cambie Now podcast, so let's talk about
Okay. We're in Cambie Now.
So much excitement. It's a great location. So it's always been, as far as I know, largely been a restaurant.
Mm-hmm. Always.
Yeah. Been a restaurant bar. Yep. It's got kind of that house-looking
yep.
feel from the outside, very homey inside. Probably dovetails really well with how you guys are going to use it.
It does. It does. Our Oregon City Clinic is in a house, an old house that's 125 years old and has a very similar feel to the Cambie Clinic. And when we, first time we walked through the building, we just said, this is neuro.
Yeah, no, we were there.
Like
no, I'm
us.
Just kidding.
Yeah,
and it's great. You'll still have the fried chicken and the drink special. So.
Well, we have two pop machines if anybody wants to. Actually, you can have it at this point. They were for sale, but if anybody needs a pop machine.
Unload them. So when you did get into the building, what were some of the, you guys have been working on it throughout the summer, what were some of the needs?
Constantly.
Yeah, what are some of the needs that the building had, either in terms of repairs or just in terms of like, it worked fine as a restaurant, but it needs to be this way for how we want to use it.
Yeah. It actually, the floor plan worked really well for us, but it had sat empty for so many years that there was just incredible amounts of cleanup.
Like 5 or 6 years.
2013, I believe.
Yeah.
Six. Tons of cleanup, tons of repair. We built 5 new mental health offices in what was one of the big dining rooms.
Okay.
One of
was
the dining
upstairs?
Downstairs.
Downstairs. Okay.
Yep. The other downstairs dining room by the bar is now our big gym.
Yeah.
And 2 small treatment rooms.
Mm-hmm.
The entire upstairs will be all administration.
Okay.
So we'll have a big open space for most of our admin and then a few private offices up
there. Is that admin space just for the Cambie facility or for a larger part of your nonprofit?
We're actually moving our entire admin team to Cambie.
Awesome.
So we've outgrown our Oregon City building, and we're opening more of that building up for treatment.
Cool.
And all of the admin is coming to Cambie.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Karen hasn't had an office for, executive director had 2 other people in her office for the last year.
Probably, yeah.
Yeah,
last year. I've been working from home or at whatever spot happens to be open because we're
so
crowded
stuffed.
In Oregon City.
And I'm sure she probably carved out the biggest corner office for
She did.
I did, actually. I've never had a nice office, and I'm going to have a nice office in this building.
Well, you've had a nice office.
Actually, the last few years when nobody else was in it.
Well, we're so happy to have you in Cambie and the investment that you guys have made on behalf of your nonprofit. One thing you mentioned, kind of the floor plan working for you. I don't know if this is true, but this is what I've heard as being maybe one of the reasons that restaurants have had trouble at that location is because it's so fragmented as a dining area. You had tables upstairs, you had tables downstairs, no really big spaces, a lot of smaller rooms. But it sounds like that works really well for what you're doing because you're going to have some areas where different types of services happen.
Yep.
Exactly. And as a restaurant, I can see it would be very difficult. The kitchen is downstairs in the back center, so the wait staff was having to run up and down the stairs all the time.
Right.
And I can see that it'd be hard as a restaurant.
Yeah.
But it's worked really well for us.
I heard you say there's a gym.
We call it a gym. So it's a big open space where we do a lot of our therapy.
Okay.
So big suspended equipment is part of the therapy that we do, hanging hammocks. Big
swings,
giant balls,
climbing,
climbing structures.
There was talk at one point, wasn't there, of a ball pit? Is that it?
There is a ball pit, and we can.
Like, am I thinking of Chuck E. Cheese?
No, we always have a ball pit in our clinic, and we're starting out kind of bare bones, and we're hoping to get some sponsors for each individual room.
Okay,
and then we'll be able to equip. Each space a little bit better.
That'd be great.
If we can pull in some sponsors.
Because it's all specialty stuff. So like a climbing wall, $10,000. We got a grant from Nike for one in Hillsborough. But just for kids with disabilities, they can't work a normal climbing wall. They need a little bit extra help.
Yeah.
And that's a very high price specialty item.
Yeah. So how did the services, things you're talking about, which to me just sounds like a fun thing to do as a kid, how does that serve as a therapy for the clients that you guys see?
I think you need a story.
I can do a little bit of background story here.
Yeah.
So our daughter with fetal alcohol syndrome was...
Our wild child.
Crazy, goofy, laughy.
Run across the kitchen, hit the oven, fall down in a laughing heap, literally.
Yeah. fly over the couch. We were looking at some videos.
I just realized my 3-year-old might have
fetal. No, this is, we had babysitters who looked like they had PTSD when we came back.
I mean, after 20 minutes.
Yeah, shell shock.
Yeah.
But she was tough. We were actually looking at some videos recently, and there were videos of our twins. And you see Lisa running through the frame. Just boom, 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 boom,
left
boom,
and
boom,
right,
boom.
Left, right.
Yeah,
back.
Just all
running
over
up to the camera. Ah, running away.
Oh my gosh, she was active.
Yeah, just yeah. A blur.
Yeah. But she, I was actually speaking to a speech therapist who was renting space at Neurotherapeutics at the time. And just saying, I don't know what we're going to do with this child. I cannot handle her. And she said, well, you know, they do a type of therapy here that might help. And I said, fine, whatever.
We'll do anything.
Yeah, we'll do anything. So we brought her in and we started with a therapy that's called sensory integration therapy. And it's used for a lot of kids who have autism or are on the spectrum, kids with fetal alcohol syndrome, prenatal drug exposure, any type of learning disabilities, just the kids who are really struggling to kind of integrate the world around them.
Yeah.
And this therapy works on that.
Yeah.
And it is a lot of active movement and play.
Yeah.
But we're working on foundational skills.
Yeah.
And one of the programs we do is called the ALERT program, and it's a regulation program. And Lisa
is our star.
Lisa's one of our stars on that. One of my touchstones is that Lisa went to a special ed preschool when she was little. She went to a Mommy and Me program. And I had four kids at home, less than 5 years apart. And Lisa got put into this special program where I would go for the first hour and then I would get 2 hours off. And this was heaven for me. And after about the first 2 weeks, I got a call from the staff saying that I had to stay because they couldn't handle Lisa. So I,
and these are
people with masters in special education. So I went back and I stayed, and then we moved up to Oregon and I put her in a little preschool in the park program. And after the first day, I got the phone call, Mrs. Burlgy, we can't handle Lisa. And the little gal there was, she was a high school girl and they all had camp names, and I can still remember her name. It was Flower.
Flower.
Was her camp
Flower,
name.
Flower, if you're out there. Okay?
I want to talk to you someday. So she said, that I don't want to kick Lisa out. Is there anything you do that works with her? And I took Lisa by the hand, and in one of my not finer moments, I turned on my heel and said, there's nothing that works with Lisa. And I left. And I put Lisa in the van, and we drove up the hill, and I crawled into the back of the van, and I said, Lisa, and I said this very rhetorically because Lisa wasn't real verbal at that time. I said, why do you do these things? And she looked at me and she said, because I'm scared.
Wow.
And I just went, oh my gosh. It was like a knife had gone through my heart. I had no clue that inside that crazy, laughy, goofy little girl was a child who was so afraid of not being able to control herself. So I made a pledge to her that day, and I said, I'm going to help you, and we're going to, when you get the little crazies, they turn into the big crazies, and those big crazies are what get you in trouble. And I said, we're going to stop it at the little crazies. And I literally would sit in my family room and watch her for 45 minutes at a time, waiting for that trigger, and getting in there and stopping it before it got out of control. And this was just around the time that we had started therapy at Neurotherapeutics. And I went and I very happily told her therapist, I have this new thing. I have the big crazies and the little crazies, and it's working. And so I explained the whole thing to her, and she said, oh, the ALERT program. I said, what? There's a name for it? And with Lisa, it's always stayed the big crazies and the little crazies. We never changed to the ALERT terminology. But it's that ability to just be able to get in there and help the kid control that behavior that that is really often very scary for them. And it doesn't manifest in that way. She never acted scared. She just acted crazy. And so many of these kids, they need an interpreter. They need someone to help the parents understand where the behavior is coming from.
And what the remedies are. I mean, sometimes with Lisa, it's time to calm, but some kids need to move. And if they're moving inappropriately, they'll end up getting in trouble. So giving them feeding the part of their sensory system that needs stimulation appropriately, so they don't go feed it inappropriately in a classroom or something like that.
Wow. Well, thank you so much for that incredibly powerful story and from your personal life. Thank you for sharing that. Listeners can't see. Mackenzie was really, I was holding it together great. Mackenzie really had a hard time just emotionally handling that. Very overcome. Like I said, I handled it great. Well, I feel like I could talk to you guys all day, but we're running out of time here. We are here in late August. You guys are opening up next month.
Day after Labor Day, we're opening up with admin.
Yeah.
The next Monday, we open up for clients.
Okay.
And then we have our grand opening.
Partay.
Yep. There will be champagne if you want to join us.
I would love to sip some champagne in a mental health clinic.
There you go.
On my bucket list. Pretty sure. So, but that'll be great. That's just open to the public. Come
open
see
to the public,
the kind of, come see what the new building looks like. Come
we'll
see
have tours
the
and
kinds of services you guys do and just meet you and your wonderful team.
No swinging on the swings, though. Might be dangerous after the champagne.
I mean, I can't, but they can't.
That's right. Special pass.
Cool. Well, we will definitely be there. Hope lots of folks can come out. What time is that? It's on the 24th, you said?
Yes, 4 to 6 p.m.
Okay, cool. 4 to 6. Former Grand Central Station, now the home, the candy home of neuro.
Therapeutic pediatric
therapy.
Isn't there an ink, too?
There is an ink.
And an ink. Did see? I had to help you with that. You're
you
welcome.
Did.
Anything to add before we go, guys?
I think just really thanking the Canby community for the incredibly warm welcome that we have had. It's been really wonderful.
Well, thank you.
Yeah,
Canby.
Just thanking us for being there. And we've had people donate already. We've got little yard signs in front of the clinic, and we've got a lot of support.
Yeah. Well, we are very thrilled to have you here. Again, thanks for coming to our town and giving us the services that, as you mentioned, was such a huge need. And it's also just be great to have somebody in that building. So somebody at the other end of our town. Thank you guys so much for being on the show today.
Thank
it's
you.
Been really fun.
Thanks.
Oh, wait. Mackenzie.
Oh, you have to say something.
You have
something.
To say something.
You have to say something. Come on.
Or ask a question.
Yeah.
Hi. Wait, we can ask her questions, can't we?
Of course you can.
Have you ever been a camp counselor? And what was your name?
I have not been a camp counselor. I was a VBS counselor.
Yeah.
So, but not like a week long.
What was your name in the VBS?
It's probably Mackenzie.
But,
oh, she had one. Look at her face.
Sunshine.
Ah!
Oh, if you ever meet flowers,
For an extended and ad-free version of this interview and to support our show and ensure we can continue to bring you local, exclusive content like this, please consider joining Canby Now Plus as a premium member. For details, visit canbynowpod.com/plus.
The Canby Now Podcast and Now Hear the Studios would like to thank Ryan David Dwyer for composing the intro music for our new limited series podcast, The Other Side. Ryan is a local composer, songwriter, and budding music producer interested in a variety of contract jobs. He also loves to teach people how to play the piano without sheet music, so they can just start channeling and experiencing their inner creativity. Give his website a look at harpaziomusic.com. That's harpaziomusic.com.
So I'm here with Derek Hill, president of Advantage Mortgage in Canby. I was wondering what's going on in the mortgage industry right now.
The mortgage industry is on fire right now. The big thing that's really exciting for us is that we are now an independent mortgage broker, which means that we can offer substantially lower rates and lower fees for our customers. For example, we just got a loan last week, and the realtor said, hey, I think you should go talk to Derek at Advantage Mortgage. And sure enough, we got the borrower 3/4 better rate, and we saved him 14 grand in fees.
Cool. So where can people find you?
So office number is 503-266-5800, or they can find us on the web at findtheadvantage.com. But most people just give us a holler, or they stop in.
Yeah, cool. Thanks, Derek.
You bet. Advantage Mortgage, NMLS number 1770599, Derek Hills, NMLS number 50183, Equal Housing Opportunity.
Neuro is not the only major downtown Canby property that people are buzzing about. The former Parsons building was recently announced as a new home of Caldera International, a company that makes and sells therapeutic gel packs around the world. Daniel Godfrey, owner and founder of Caldera, graciously agreed to join us at Now Hear This Studios to tell us a little bit about his company and what excites them about their soon-to-be new home in downtown Canby.
I'm good, good. Thanks for having me today.
Absolutely. Thanks for investing in our community and welcome to Canby. Tell us a little bit about your company.
So Caldera International, it's been around 20 years. I started the business out of my garage, making gel packs and loading up a little Nissan pickup truck, selling them across the country.
Yeah, we talked just a little bit through email about this back when we did the story last week, but it sounded like a pretty interesting journey where you were literally going like local drugstore to local grocery store, yep, just trying to sell this product,
exactly,
and trying to get your
getting
name
paid
out there.
Getting paid as I go. I literally would get a paycheck as I'd set it up in the store. They'd write me a check and I'd go on to the next
enough
store.
Enough gas to get you down the road.
Exactly, yeah. It just, you know, things kind of fell into place and, you know, looking back at it, I wouldn't change it for the world, but of course it had its moments. It was very challenging at times, yeah, as with any small company, yeah, starting up. So
yeah, I envy that a little bit. I mean, you do have to put yourself out there, but you learn, like, you know, all they can say is no. Like,
that's
you
right.
There's nothing to be afraid of the word no, you know, but a lot of us are. A lot of us are afraid to kind of take that step, take that risk, mm-hmm, put ourselves out there and face rejection. So,
yep.
Yeah, cool.
Yes, definitely have to be a risk taker, I think, with any small business. But
yeah, so what does Caldera look like now?
So Caldera's, you know, it's grown. We're in a lot of national chains.
Not out of your garage anymore.
No, not in the garage anymore. You know, it's gone from selling to the independent pharmacies to several chain stores. You know, mm-hmm, Kroger and Publix in Florida are some of the largest ones. Bartell Drugs up
different
in Seattle.
Comments.
We're in Hong Kong and Japan. I've sold to countries in India and Singapore and Europe. So, really, it's an international company, mm-hmm, and you know, really excited about what the future brings. I mean,
yeah,
I can't wait to see what the next 20 years brings, and
yeah,
we're gonna be able to do it right here in Canby. So
yeah, that's awesome. So, and those deals over in Singapore and Hong Kong, did you just do those by phone, or you take the Nissan over there as well?
Yeah, do trade shows and whatnot. You just meet people along,
yeah,
the way, contacts and connections. And,
yeah,
you know, the one thing that we're really excited about is a new distributor that we just landed in Japan. It's a large medical distributor, and that's,
cool,
really starting to get some traction. And then the new line that we launched just a couple of years ago is the new pet therapy line.
Right,
it's one of a kind right now in the country. It's patented system and very unique to the pet market. So I'm excited about where that takes us.
Is that for dogs and cats? Or
it can be for, as we say, pets. You,
yeah,
know, it's primarily for canines,
okay,
and dogs.
Yeah.
It can be used on cats.
Yeah, I have a pet turtle. No, I'm just kidding.
A rabbit.
Yeah, right. Yeah, yeah. I don't know how cold you want to get a turtle. They're cold-blooded anyway. But,
right.
But yeah, so where did that idea come from? That is this unique and one of a kind.
Yeah, so we had a veterinarian hospital contact us, mm-hmm, and they were using our human hot cold therapy products.
Yeah.
And they...
Like the doctors were.
The veterinarians, yeah.
Oh,
the
on,
rehab.
The, on the animals.
So, yeah, on the animals,
gotcha,
themselves.
Oh, okay.
And obviously... you know, the anatomy of a dog is very much different than,
right,
that of a human. So
yes,
they weren't really working out that well.
Yeah.
And so
and
they said, do you have,
I mean,
anything?
Smaller, like,
completely,
you,
the legs, everything.
Target certain muscle groups with that.
They said, we love your hot cool therapy products, but do you have anything for dogs? And,
yeah,
and so that kind of started, you know, the process of thinking about it. We partnered with them. They're out of Tucson, V. Scott, out of Tucson, Arizona.
Yeah.
And it took us about 2 years to develop the program,
yeah,
and the product line. And then we launched it into the veterinarian community.
Yeah.
And so that's going quite well. But a pet specialty is another market we want to start getting into. You know, we're selling to Petco.com and HealthyPets.com online.
Mm.
Amazon's approached us. But really, we feel like the bigger market is going direct to consumer. So a lot of the dock diving type of organizations,
okay,
the field trials, the agility, the fly ball,
yeah,
those type of, and just basic consumers who have maybe an aging dog that they don't want to put through surgery.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah, that's cool. And I hear you're also looking into maybe doing something with horses.
With equine, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that's when I first started out, I actually had developed a line of equine, and I couldn't do both, so I decided to go ahead and do the human.
Yeah.
I always had the equine in the back of my mind, thinking,
yeah,
I'd come back to it someday. And with this new system that we have for the dogs, I want to use that same harness system,
mm,
and develop that into an equine. system. So I think that somewhere down the road, maybe in the next year or two, it will be coming out with the equine stuff.
Cool. I love it. Well, answer the burning question. Why Campy? What brings you here? You were you are in Portland currently, is that right?
Well, we're in right by Bridgeport in Tualatin, Tigard area.
Okay, yeah. Cool. That's your corporate office.
So we were looking for space, and as you know, the commercial market's really, there's not a lot of supply out there.
Yeah.
And so had kind of given up on the idea of buying some commercial property or a building, and knowing that my lease is going to expire at the end of this year, I was thinking, well, I'm just going to have to renew the lease for another 5 years. Just,
Not an option. Yeah.
So my stepdaughter and her husband are actually looking to buy a home, and they were looking at a home here in Canby.
Okay.
So my wife and I were traveling in Canby one day looking at this house downtown Canby.
You were looking for residential.
It was residential. I came across the old Parsons building. Like, oh, honey, look, the Parsons building's for sale.
I said, because they were wanting.
That was one of my first customers back in 2001. Yeah. And then all of a sudden I got the idea, like, I wonder if I could make this work. Mm. And so I started pursuing that.
Yeah.
And it worked out really well. So I'm very excited about that.
Yeah, cool. So what kind of appeals to you? Obviously, you were looking for space, and here's space, but it's got to be more than that. What kind of appeals to you?
Obviously, I mean, I love the whole
Canby.
Yeah, I mean, the whole community, the whole small town vibe really works well for me.
Sure.
I grew up in Sherwood.
Yeah.
My family had a small business downtown Sherwood, and downtown Canby, where we're at right now, reminds me of sort of my childhood.
Yeah. You know?
And I just really like the small town community. I love the fact that there's a lot of growth taking place right now.
Mm.
So, and I love what's going on downtown. I want to be a part of that.
And
I want to see if I can help contribute to that downtown vibe that's going on.
Yeah, absolutely. I love it. I mean, for somebody, because Parsons, when you talk about the small town feel, like, that is a hole, like, literally in our downtown, like, just an empty space right now, but also just more in a figurative sense. Like, it was a big part of the heart of downtown, a big part of the community. And to have someone come in, invest in that space, be excited about that space, and also, you know, not just see it as like, okay, this is where I'm going to put my business for a little while, you know, or whatever, just because there's space here, but to really be in sync with that desire of fostering the community feel of Canby is really exciting to me. I'm pretty psyched about it. So,
well, thanks. Yeah, no, we're super excited, and you know, we wanted. Well, it's really important to us, my wife and I, is that we were going to honor that building too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it wasn't something that we ever had thought about tearing down or replacing. We want to, we want to rebuild it, and we want to bring it back to life.
Yeah,
you know?
For sure.
And that's really exciting to us.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, I mean, just driving by it when it's empty, like, you just get sad. You know what I mean? It's just like, oh, it's such a great spot, great location, right in the middle of our downtown. Why can they just not find something that'll fit in there? So yeah, we're excited. So tell us a little bit about, you're going to use the majority of it, obviously, for your
operation. The majority of it, but then we'll have two tenants on each side flanking, you know, the middle of the building.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's not guaranteed yet, but we're pretty sure that, we're talking to different companies about what makes sense there.
Yeah.
But maybe a Japanese restaurant's going to go into the larger space. It'll be maybe a ramen and curry type of operation, real authentic. It's just, the food is incredible.
That sounds awesome.
And I think that would really complement the downtown market. And maybe we'll go into a sushi bar down the road, but for right now, it'll just be, you know, again, the ramen and the curry, which is fantastic. And the other space is sort of a question mark right now. We don't know what's going to go in there. We've been talking about, does ice cream make sense, you know, for example, or some other type of establishment. Again, we want to be really, have a lot of intent on what we bring into that building and make sure that it complements the downtown market.
Yeah.
And so that's really our goal right now.
Yeah.
I can't wait to raise the flag again. You know, I want to get that that drinking fountain working again out front.
Yeah.
You know, those things are all really important to me.
Yeah.
I want to bring it back.
Yeah. I think an ice cream shop will be cool, just because, like, when you think of Parsons and kind of that timeless quality, you know, it would, some of the older folks that remember, like, you know, what Parsons would like, that would kind of bring them back a little bit.
Sure.
That sounds cool. But, I mean, obviously, you got to go with what works for the market and the way things are now. They're exciting. So you guys have a lot of work ahead of you, I guess.
Yeah, we're putting in over $500,000 into the renovation of the building. So there's it needs a lot of work.
Yeah.
A new roof, new HVAC, you know, the build out itself of the interior had a lot of asbestos that had
some
to be
abatement,
removed.
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of the abatement had to get done. So that's done now.
Yeah, great.
And, exciting to see it kind of being transformed into something that's going to be part of the new Canby downtown initiative.
Very exciting. What are you going to do with some of the like signs and stuff? Are you going to leave those up, like the cool like old timey pharmacy signs?
Yeah,
and stuff?
There's actually someone who's interested in this, a local person who's reached out to me. So I don't know yet. I mean, the part of me wants to keep them, there's a part of me that says, you know, what am I going to do with them?
Right.
Definitely, if I get rid of them, it'll go to the local resident who's already reached out to me wanting them. So.
I think isn't there like neon inside as well? This is like pharmacy or something?
Yeah, exactly.
No, that's what they were talking about.
No, they want the outside signs. There's three, and there's actually another one that's original from 1954, I think, or in the 50s. So there's three signs total.
Yeah.
So we'll look to, make sure those get into the right hand.
Yeah. When do you think you'll move in?
It won't be until December.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. So just work through this winter and fall.
Yeah, we're trying. Right now, the goal is to get the roof on before the rain comes.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. So the whole roof has to be replaced?
The whole thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Crazy. Well, again, I mean, that's crazy, all that work and that investment, I know, and maybe that was kind of why it was for sale for a while, that folks will, you know, saw the obviously amenities that it has, you know, its location, it's got its own parking, it's got tons of space, but maybe they started to see all the work that it needed, it scared them off a little bit. So we appreciate your backbone for not being scared away from that and for investing in our community in that way. And thanks for talking to us, Daniel.
No, I appreciate it. Thanks again for having me. No, I just want to say thank you to everyone with all the kind and warm comments and welcoming us into the community. Yeah. It's been very much appreciated. So.
Yeah.
Thank you for all that support.
I'm glad to have you here. Thanks, Daniel.
Canby Then is brought to you by Retro Revival. They are not your average antique shop. Open daily. Find them on the corner of Northwest 3rd and Grant in downtown Canby. A 1940s population boom led to the construction of a new elementary school on Grant Street in 1948, the first new school in Canby since the high school had been built 20 years earlier. It would eventually be named for William Knight, the early merchant who built the first frame schoolhouse on Baker Prairie in 1875, and who also served as clerk of the Canby School District in 1922 at the ripe age of 83. But that wouldn't happen for another 30 years. Until then, it was known as the Grant Street School, or simply Canby Grade School. 3 years later, 592 students at that school saw a presidential inauguration for the first time in their lives, thanks to a Zenith television the Burgess Appliance Company and Larry's Radio Service had installed the previous night. The 4th through 8th grades gathered around the old black and white in stunned amazement as President Dwight D. Eisenhower took the oath of office while the 3 lower grades watched the parade in the afternoon. All students gathered to watch the coverage during the noon hour. Food around the TV, that sounds like lunch at my house. That same day at exactly 9 a.m., noon in Washington, D.C., Canby Postmaster Helen I. Brown marked the change of president in a small ritual virtually no one witnessed, as she solemnly took down the large portrait of President Truman that had hung over her desk for several years. At the time, she had no picture to replace it with. According to an article in the Canby Herald, she had written to President-elect Eisenhower's headquarters to request one, but had been told that pictures were not yet available. According to the Herald, that was about the only work that was done in town that day. Virtually all work throughout Canby ground to a halt as thousands of eyes were glued to screens. In 1955, a local mother enrolled at Canby Union High School to complete her education. An injury had forced then Edith Johnson to drop out during her junior year, 17 years earlier. At the time she rejoined the student ranks as Mrs. Harvey E. Hartman, her 12-year-old daughter, Susan, was a 7th grader. "I always wanted to finish high school," Mrs. Hartman said, "but after I was hurt, I was ill for several years, then Harvey and I were married, then there was Susan, and finally the new home that we built. I just made up my mind to do it this year. Her teacher said she was a great student, particularly in English, social economics, and bookkeeping. In an interview, she admitted to feeling a little self-conscious about the age difference at first, but eventually the kids treated her like any other student. With her trim figure and bright smile, the Herald noted, Mrs. Hartman could easily be mistaken for another 17-year-old. Oh, that's creepy. The same year marked the end of an era for Canby Schools as the community grieved the passing of Howard Hayes Eccles. He was a Canby school teacher, coach, and administrator for over 50 years. At the time of his death, he was 78, retired, and a resident at the Canby Nursing Home, where he had resided for several years after suffering paralysis in both of his legs. He had been diagnosed with cancer that winter, but had shown such marked improvement by the spring that he was offering his services and income tax assistance to local residents. H.H. was born in 1876 in Brownsville, Pennsylvania, the only child of John Eccles and Caroline J. Carter Eccles. With his mother, he came to Oregon as a young child, first to Portland and later to Woodburn, where he attended school. He began his career at the White School in Hubbard before moving to Canby in 1897. He received his first teacher's pay, $30 a month, in gold coins, and they say teachers are underpaid. He taught at the one-room Riverside Schoolhouse and in Mundorf before being named principal of the Canby Elementary School in 1913, a position he would hold for the next 32 years. When he retired in 1945, Mrs. Henry Kraft, who had been his student in Riverside in 1900, her son Emil, who was in his classes in Canby, and Emil's daughter Ethel, who was a primary student during his Canby principalship, sang trio selections, reminding him and the community that his teaching work had covered three generations. Another new primary school built on Northwest Fifth Avenue in 1956 was named in his honor, at the suggestion of his grown students, who wrote letters to the school board and local paper. At one point, briefly, Eccles Elementary would be the state's largest primary school, with expected enrollment of over 700 students in 1974. The public is invited to see the extent of overcrowding at the school, the Herald recorded with its usual trademark subtlety. We'll end with a sweet one. In 1958, the state's champion cherry pie baker came from right here in Canby. 18-year-old Molly Atchison, a senior at Canby High School, and in the words of the Canby Herald, a quote, stately brunette, creepy, won the honor of competing in the national finals in Chicago that year. Her lattice top treat, baked at the University of Oregon, won in a field of 34 contestants. Her prize was $25 cash, plus two cases of Oregon cherries, 60 pounds of flour, and 5 cans of shortening. We have many more colorful stories to tell you from the history of the Canby School District, but I'll have to wait till next time on Canby Then. Hey Tyler, did you know that the world has changed in the past 20 years?
No way!
Yep, it's true. The way people shop for goods and services has completely changed since this thing called the internet started catching on.
Yeah, I've heard of it.
And yet some realtors still offer the same old services in the same old ways and for the same old percentages. Victory Point Property Group in Canby believes it's time the real estate business caught up with the times. They'll meet with you for free, explain every step of the process, give you a clear game plan, and even let you choose the listing commission.
Really? They let you choose their commission?
Really? Victory Point Property Group understands this is one of the biggest and most exciting decisions of your life, and they'll do everything they can to make sure you handle it like a rock star.
Wow, that sounds great. I'm going to check them out by calling 503-263-4700 or by visiting online at victorypointhomes.com.
You do that. Victory Point Property Group, real estate reimagined.
True story. When we first started the Canby Now podcast, we were looking to buy some stickers, just something to help us get our name out there. We didn't have a lot of money, so we tried to do everything as cheaply as possible online. We wound up with 1,000 of these teeny tiny cheap looking stickers. Not exactly the impressive swag we were hoping for, but you know, you get what you pay for.
Yes, you do. If we had been smart, we would have gone to see Carrie at Promotional Strategies. She's a real live human and a creative genius who would deliver practical, strategic ways to promote your business on any budget. If you're looking for high quality swag that you can be proud to see your logo on, Promotional Strategies is where you want to go. Find them at 695 Southeast 1st Avenue in Canby or online at ps266swag.com.
And that's our show. Special thanks to our guests today, Karen and Brent Brailgy. Did I say it right?
Brailgy.
Brailgy. And to Daniel Godfrey. Did I say that one right?
Yeah, that one.
Yeah, fun. And to all of our sponsors who really make it possible to do what we do, we encourage you to check them out and help support the local small businesses who support us. Hey, if you like what you just heard, please let us know. Write a review for us on Facebook, iTunes, or your favorite podcast app. And don't forget to subscribe so you never miss our latest episodes.
Cora Sutton is a happy, active second grader at Karis Elementary School. She loves SpongeBob SquarePants, she loves science, and she loves, on very rare occasions, fighting with her sisters. Talking to her, you have no idea that the heart beating in her chest is not the one she was born with. On our next episode, we chat with Cora and her mom on almost the one-year anniversary of the day she went under the knife for a life-saving heart transplant.
If you have a news tip, an idea for a guest we should invite on the program, or suggestions of how we can improve, please contact us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at CanBeNow, or to learn how you can start supporting our show and gain access to exclusive content through Patreon, visit CanBeNowPod.com/plus.